This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Some of the most vocal opponents of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq are those who lost loved ones in the attacks of September 11, 2001. Andrew Rice, a member of the group September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, lost his older brother David Rice when he was killed in the World Trade Center. Last week, he spoke to the Galveston, Texas Peace Action Network about the war in Iraq and about stopping the cycle of violence based on victimization.
We are very much in the foundation of what we do, doing this work to protect our troops, along with innocent people. I don't know how it is against our troops to say we don't want them deployed to have to sacrifice their lives for a war that is not necessary. The interesting thing, I was on Fox News yesterday. We were asked to have someone from our group go, and they had another person who lost a loved one on 9/11 who supports the war. And it wasn't a debate; it was just a short conversation about our positions. And I was making the point that I come to this conflict now being against it from very rational, realist, almost military realism perspective. And my future mother-in-law happened to have the TV on. She didn't know I was going to be on. She emailed me and said, "Wow, it's really good. I was surprised that you weren't idealistic as we had feared." And I thought, you know, that's interesting because, and I mean this, truly mean this, I actually believe that there's not much ambiguity about the fact that those of us who are against this conflict are the ones who are the true realists, actually. I think it's idealistic to say, oh, we're going to go bomb a country into democracy. Is that realist or is that idealist? To say, oh, the resulting consequential anti-Americanism that is already now raging even more throughout the Arab street, that's going to be irrelevant to the continual rise of Al-Qaeda, when in fact it's one of the key ingredients of what pulls 20 to 25 to 30-year-old men into Al-Qaeda. So when people say, oh, this is just sort of people getting hands together, singing songs, and they want to change Osama bin Laden's heart, I feel that's unfortunate that they don't have a better understanding of what we are about, not to talk about us and them, but also a better understanding of the conflict. What I would say, I'm doing this work. The only reason I'm brought to come and talk at places like this is because of my personal loss. I lost my brother, David. He was my old brother, the oldest, you know, brother. I'm in the middle, not anymore. And he was working in the World Trade Center on September 11th. I was living in New York at the time. My younger sister was living there and still lives there. He was transferred to New York 7 months before from Chicago. At the time, we were very excited because it was the first time we all got to live together in the same city since he probably was a senior in high school in 1988 when we were all in Oklahoma City. That's where I grew up, in Oklahoma City, another place affected by violence and terrorism. My brother, I know, would not want innocent lives to be lost in any attempt to redress what happened to him. He also was a very logical person who loved the truth, got angered in a righteous way about when truth wasn't being told and was being obscured, and I know that he would be very upset at the way that, and this is not, I don't believe this is an extreme statement at all, the way in which many, many well-intentioned yet fearful Americans have been misled, I believe, over the last year especially. A good starting point would be the Central Intelligence Agency, which is not your bastion of anti-war activists, okay? They came out with a report in October of 2002, so what, that's 7 months ago, which they provided to congressional hearings, and which was written about extensively, and I can tell you how to look at it on the internet, saying that up until that point, all the extensive intelligence work that they had done about Iraq and Saddam Hussein's regime was, to this point, Saddam Hussein has always stopped short of supporting international terrorism because his number one obsession is regime preservation. We know that within days after the 9/11 attacks, we already had all the names of the hijackers. We knew the money was funneled back to where the bank accounts. The idea that he could be involved in supporting terrorism and we didn't link it back to him. He's maybe an evil person, if you want to use that term, but he's not stupid. And they have ample evidence over the last 12 years that he's never involved himself international terrorism. The only scenario that the Central Intelligence Agency could imagine him doing that is in the case of being invaded. And now, it's interesting what you see coming up now. I don't think it's just a coincidence. The first reports I've ever heard of Iraqi operatives being arrested for possible terrorist attacks was in the last week. You know, something else monumental has been happening in the last week. I don't think that's just a coincidence. Secondly, Saddam Hussein's regime is a secular national socialist dictatorship. Many of you probably realize this. Al-Qaeda is a religiously based extremist group that wants Saddam Hussein's regime gone. They want all secular governments in the Middle East gone and replaced with regimes very similar to what you have in Iran, which are theocratic, religious-based governments. In the threat attributed to Osama bin Laden that was put out in the about a month ago, which the media here reports on but doesn't really ever tell you exactly what's being said. In fact, there was actually some false reports in that last one. You could go to the BBC and other sites and actually read word-for-word translation of what this threat was. And if this was true, he called Saddam Hussein an infidel. That's what they call us, is an infidel. So the idea that they have some sort of natural alliance has never been proven. Now, I'm not saying that it can't ever happen. And there's a sense in the peace movement you've heard that we, by the actions we're taking, are actually creating what we fear most, that we actually may be driving together elements that have never been together. In the West Bank in the last week, you've had people marching with photos of Saddam Hussein, which they have never done in recent years. There were some of it during the first Gulf War. Now Saddam Hussein's a hero in the West Bank. This hasn't been going on for that. So the way in which we are actually creating the scenarios that we most fear, there's a lot of rational evidence for that. So taking that into consideration and taking these in these reports, that the likelihood of Saddam Hussein actually getting his weapons of mass destruction, which I'm sure he has, which we're now afraid he's going to use, into the hands of someone like Al-Qaeda was very unlikely. And this, and in that report in October, the Central Intelligence Agency said, we have much more dire threats from Al-Qaeda. And of course, Osama bin Laden is still alive. So when we get on stage, our group, with members of military families speak out, people who have come out who have loved ones, Nancy and Charlie Richardson, who run that group, their son is a Marine in Kuwait. They got word earlier this week that he's now been deployed into the war zone. When they get up on stage saying they don't want their son to have to fight in a war that's not justified and it's not necessary to protect our freedoms, him to have to kill someone or be killed, I don't see how that's not being supportive of our troops. I want our troops, as many of us do, back home. Many of them live here in Texas with their families. Breaks my heart to see these reports of people, of troops being killed, and they're going. And it reminds me of what happened after 9/11 when the media came to my parents' house and us and wanted to interview us within hours of finding out. And all these stories of them and seeing, you know, now it reminds me of losing my brother.
Andrew Rice is a member of September 11th Families for a Peaceful Tomorrow. Thanks to Farah Charmchi and Renee Feltz at sister station KPFT in Houston for production assistance with that segment.
Lord, what's happening to this human race? I can't even see one friendly face. Brothers fight brothers, and sisters wink their eyes, while silver tongues bear fruits of poison lies. Just take a look at your children, born innocent. Every boy
Aretha Franklin, take a look.
What's happening to your precious brain?
Much has been said on the part of the Bush administration about the horrible repressive regime of Saddam Hussein. When the U.S. troops took over Baghdad, the cameras rolled in to take wide-angle shots of the prisons in which it's reported that he tortured, killed, and disappeared Iraqis. And I think the people dancing in the street at his removal is as powerful a statement as you can get about the hatred and disdain for Saddam Hussein among the Iraqi people. Having said that, however, it also needs to be said that the U.S. plays a major role in training thousands of soldiers and dictators throughout Latin America in the tactics of torture. As Americans cheer on the troops for ridding the Iraqi people of a brutal, torturous dictator like Saddam Hussein, there is a degree of accountability that Americans must also take for the actions of the School of the Americas, which essentially teaches torture right here in this country at Fort Benning, Georgia. An award-winning documentary has been produced called Hidden in Plain Sight by John Smahula and narrated by Martin Sheen. It delves into the history of the U.S. Army of the Americas, or the SOA, and raises serious questions about the ethics of this military school. Joining me in the studio is co-producer of Hidden in Plain Sight, Andres Thomas Contreras. Welcome, Andres.
Thank you, Verna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Andres, explain to us precisely what takes place at the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia.
Well, Verna, what has taken place there historically has been some of the most heinous actions that this government has committed. The School of the Americas has been known as the School of Assassins, the School of Dictators, the School for Torture, and it is a school that goes against every principle that this country supposedly stands for. There has been a movement that to close the school for many, many years, and that movement is gaining strength, and we continue to build the resistance to these actions.
Andres, last night, War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld equated the falling of the 20-foot statue of Saddam Hussein in central Baghdad to the fall of the Berlin Wall and to the collapse of the Iron Curtain, and he went on to list a number of dictators throughout history who have been deposed, much like in the manner of Saddam Hussein, we suspect. And I couldn't help wondering, while he was giving that list, how many of those dictators did the U.S. have perhaps a role in training? Who are some of the dictators in the documentary, Andres, that can directly be linked to the School of the Americas? And is there a direct link to Saddam Hussein himself?
Well, let's start with Saddam. As we know, War Secretary Rumsfeld was one of the last U.S. officials to meet with Saddam Hussein. And it's very, very clear that he was an ally of the United States during some of the most repressive actions that the Iraqi government was involved in. And at that time, when the Iraqi government was committing chemical atrocities against its own people, the United States government did not say anything when that was going on. Then when Saddam turned against the U.S. policy, then he became an enemy. And as soon as a tyrant becomes an enemy of the United States, then we go after him, just like we did against Manuel Noriega, who was trained at the School of the Americas. Mm. The U.S. invaded Panama in order to remove him. And what we need to be very clear about is that it's the poor who really end up suffering the most. First, because the U.S. props up these dictators, they commit heinous crimes against their own people, which the U.S. does not complain about at the time, unless those dictators turn against the U.S. policy. And when that happens, then the U.S. invades to go after the dictators, and in the process, they kill, maim, and cause the most horrible suffering against the poorest of the population.
So can you sort of walk us through what actually takes place at the School of the Americas? I know in the documentary, a torture victim, Sister Diana Ortiz, spoke of her personal experiences and described the school as an enormous torture chamber. Are these testimonies enough to link the school with the war crimes in Latin America and other third world countries?
Well, you know, we have direct evidence that torture was used in, I'm sorry, torture training took place at the School of the Americas. We have it documented. And in fact, in our documentary, which we'll be showing here in Washington this coming weekend.
Is it going to tour around the country as well?
It is. And we'll say more about that a little bit mm-hmm. later. In our film, we clearly show that it was discovered that a manual using training torture was used at the School of the Americas. The officials of the School of the Americas don't even deny that the manual existed or was used. They claim it was a reference, or they claimed it was never used in classes, but you use this manual as a reference. You allow your students to have access to it. It talks about specific torture techniques, and these are things that have been trained with U.S. taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. And so these are policies that are intentional in terms of causing suffering to the people of Latin America in the case of the mm-hmm. School of the Americas and around the world.
Tell us about the contribution from victim, Sister Diana Ortiz, yes. in the film.
Yes, Sister Diana is local here to Washington, and she suffered some very, very brutal treatment. She's a U.S. citizen of Guatemalan descent. She went to Guatemala to teach the poor.
In September of 1987, I traveled to the highlands of Guatemala to live and work alongside the Mayan people. My ministry was teaching children how to read and write in their native language, and I was placing the Bible within their own cultural context. A year after my arrival, I started to receive death threats. I heard a man's voice. Hola, mi amor. Hello, my love. And for me, that was the beginning of the nightmare. I was interrogated, tortured, and repeatedly raped. A doctor found over 111 cigarette burns on my back alone. There was a fourth man present during my torture. He was an American. I was also lowered into a pit that was packed with human bodies. Bodies of children, women, and men. Some of them were lying face up and caked with blood. Some were dead, some were alive. Even as I'm describing this right now, I feel like I can see them and that I can hear them. When I think of the School of the Americas, the image that comes to my mind is an enormous torture chamber, and I tremble at that thought.
Now, there is a peace movement called School of the America Watch, which was founded to shut down the school and provide humanitarian assistance to families and survivors of that. Has that group been at all effective, and what kind of response has there been from the American public once they learn about this school and what is taking place inside those walls?
You know, Verna, the School of the Americas Watch is one of the most effective movements that the peace movement in this country has seen now prior to the Iraqi war. In the 1990s, the protests at the School of the Americas, which is in Columbus, Georgia, at Fort Benning, became the largest protest against U.S. policy since the Vietnam War. More than 10,000 people have gathered there the last few years in November, commemorating the massacre in El Salvador of the six Jesuit priests killed by School of the Americas trained soldiers. And the School of the Americas Watch, founded by Father Roy Bourgeois, became so effective that the U.S. Army had to, in fact, closed the School of the Americas per se. Mm-hmm. But in the same vote that the Congress closed the School of the Americas, they also opened a new institute called the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, which is a big mouthful, and it's sort of a way of distracting attention from the history of repression taught at that school.
Where is that located?
It's located in the very same building that the School of the Americas was. So it's really what the School of the Americas Watch calls new name, same shame.
Mm-hmm. And so it continues then. There was really, apparently there was the School of the Americas Watch didn't really have a lasting impact on this practice policy on the part of the U.S. government.
School of the Americas Watch has garnered the support of tens of thousands of activists, people of faith and conscience in this country and even around the world to draw attention upon the history of what has been taught at the school. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, the U.S. has had to, the U.S. government had to change the name and now even incorporate human rights courses into the curriculum. And so because there's been such a focus on the School of the Americas and now on the Western Hemisphere, they have had to polish up their act completely because they're under the watchful attention of Congress and the U.S. public. And so the atrocities taught at the School of the Americas before it changed its name have simply transferred elsewhere. We know that they're still going on. They may not be going on at Fort Benning, but we continue to ask for the closure of the Western Hemisphere Institute, which we still call the School of the Americas, because symbolically we know that torture training is still going on, and not only torture training, but we see on the front page of the Washington Post that the U.S. military is involved in torture at the Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. We can only imagine that torture has been...
When was that?
Oh, this was in December. A front page of the Washington Post. It clearly talks about if the U.S. cannot admit to using torture, what they do is they send victims who they want tortured to other countries, mm-hmm. which is the same thing.
And there's a phrase for that. It was...
There is a phrase. I can't remember what it is. But they do engage in... tactics that they do not necessarily mm-hmm. name as torture, but anyone else would be, mm-hmm. anyone else would name it as such, including sleep deprivation, including making putting prisoners and creating such an atmosphere for them to be under such incredible psychological duress mm-hmm. that it really is torture. And Amnesty International and others would define it as torture.
Mm. And one has to wonder if those techniques are being applied to the many people of Arabic or Middle Eastern descent that are being corralled in, so to speak, under the Homeland Security Act and the Patriot Act under the auspices of fighting the war against terrorism. I know your film focuses specifically on the School of the Americas, mm-hmm. but has any of your research indicated whether those tactics are being applied more broadly?
You know, in our film, we make a connection between the Major General John Lemoyne, who has been the base commander at Fort Benning and where the School of the Americas has been located, and some war crimes that he was involved in, as investigated by journalist Seymour Hersh and published in the New Yorker magazine. Seymour Hersh discovered that Major General John Lemoyne, at the time he was a colonel, was involved in the killing of Iraqi POWs. This is in the first Gulf War in 1991. And so this example of having a general involved in war crimes as the head of a base where the School of the Americas is located only sends a message to the soldiers being trained there that, of course, it's okay to engage in human rights violations. We may talk about freedom and democracy and human rights in our courses and in the public eye, but what are we doing behind the scenes, Verna? That's what the U.S. is involved in that needs to stop.
Okay, Andres, thank you very much for your time and your perspective. Any final thoughts on your part?
Yeah, I'd like to share with your listeners that this weekend there's a conference going on here in Washington and a whole mobilization against U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. calling for the closure of U.S. bases in the hemisphere, as well as the rights of indigenous peoples. And we're connecting it with the issue of globalization and the need to fight against the U.S. trade area of the America, the free trade area of the Americas, the FTAA, and other issues. And so it's coming together. We're going to be showing our film this weekend here in Washington, and we hope that as many people as possible can come to participate in this conference sponsored by the Latin America Solidarity mm-hmm. Coalition. And we're also going to participate in the Great March Against the War this coming Saturday afternoon here in Washington.
Now, this is a national program, so is this film available to our listeners around the country?
It is, Verna, and in fact, it has won awards. It's been it will be showing at the Seattle International Film Festival coming up. It was just shown in Dallas, Texas, at the Latin American Studies Association, where it won an award and was the most well-received film. It will be showing this week in the Istanbul Film Festival internationally, and we're very glad to be supporting the peace movement in Turkey, because that peace movement has pressured their government not to allow the U.S. to use their territory for a land invasion. So we need to be supporting each other internationally like this, and we're glad that our film can contribute to that. We invite folks to contact us if you would like to have the film shown in your area. We'd be very glad to come. Our director, myself, co-producer, and our producer are available to come. And I'd like to leave our webpage and other contact information if I could. Our webpage is www.hiddeninplainsight.org. And you can find all our contact information there. You can get a copy of the film for educational purposes, and you can invite us to come and speak in your schools, your community, and we'd be very glad to do that.
Andres, thank you very much for your time and your perspective and for your work on this very important film.
Thank you, Verna. It's a pleasure.
Andres Contreras, co-producer of Hidden in Plain Sight. Finally tonight, as bombs continue to rain down across Iraq, D.C. activist David Sabor offers these thoughts in a poem he recited at the recent Campus Anti-War Network Festival for Peace here in the nation's capital.
Bombs bursting in air. Children run around, round without a care, playing in asbestos-filled sandboxes as politicians stand by and stare, claiming to be helpless. Our children's mental health is less than that of other countries because these politicians care more about their bombs than our babies. Capitalist dogs foaming at the mouth as if infected with rabies or some other deadly contagious disease, causing the people so much dis-ease because of the immense greed of an elite few. If they could, they would charge you for morning dew and sunlight and rainstorms too. They play Frankenstein with nature. Tuskegee and NIH will plan your fate through motives of hate. Innate attacks on the peoples of the world. AIDS virus snuffing out the lives of too many baby girls. Genetic engineering will now build you a six-headed squirrel. All to consume more nuts, more nuts, more nuts, more nuts, more nuts, more nuts. Can't digest it all. Self-destruct. Cut funds to education. $500 billion to that missile test station. That cop hit me 5 times in the back of the head with his nightstick. And because I didn't crash to my knees in submission, I was arrested for assault and aggravation of ego. Death and murder are too familiar to the masses. Our children are being taught to idolize murders and rapists in their history classes. Mostly lies are fed. Dead like blind lambs to the slaughter. Forgotten sons and daughters of the earth. Now measuring your worth by bullshit job titles and how much idle capital you've gained. Still trying to ignore your brother's pain and blood stains streaking down the streets. And how do I spell relief? 1-L-O-V-E.
D.C. poet David Sabor. Thanks to Selena Musuta and Reem Karhuta from Pacifica Station WPFW for assisting with that piece. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Chauffard. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Otto Hammett of KPFA, Bentha Berklin and Stephanie Cogden. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.